Margot. It has to be fake. Fox News is saying not. Fox News would say whatever makes the most people tune in to Fox News. Sure. Still. What are these lines coming out of her hands? Electricity. But that's just... I mean, yeah. Where'd it come from? Nigeria, I think. Went up yesterday. There are a lot of nut jobs out there, Daniel. Fakers, scammers. There are more videos. Since this one went out, there have been 4, 5 faked. People get excited about these things. It's a, what they call it, a meme? You heard about that thing, Slender Man. Some girls try to kill their friend as a tribute to him. It. Terrible. It's 4 or 5 videos every hour, Margot. Fuck. Yep. Well, what do you want me to do about it? Close the schools? Can you even imagine what I'll get from the parents? Can you imagine the millions of voting parents and what they'll do if I send all their kids home today? Can you imagine what you'll get from the teachers' unions if one of their membership is injured, crippled, killed? Imagine the liability. Killed? Can't be certain. Margot stares down at her hands, clutching the edge of the desk. She's going to look like an idiot, going along with this. It has to be a stunt for a TV show. She'll be the shit for brains, the mayor who closed the schools of this major metropolitan area because of a fucking practical joke. But if she doesn't close them and something happens, Daniel will get to be the governor of this great state who warned the mayor, who tried to convince her to do something, but all to no avail. She can practically see the tears running down his cheeks as he gives his interview via live feed from the governor's mansion. Fuck! Daniel checks his phone. They've announced closures in Iowa and Delaware, he says. Fine. Fine, do it, fine, I'll close them. There are 4 or 5 days where she barely goes home. She doesn't remember leaving the office or driving back or crawling into bed, although she supposes she must have done these things. The phone doesn't stop. She goes to bed clutching it and wakes up holding it. Bobby has the girls, so she doesn't need to think about them, and God forgive her, they don't cross her mind. This thing has broken out across the world, and no one knows what the fuck is going on. To start with, there were confident faces on the TV. Spokespeople from the CDC saying it was a virus, not very severe, most of the people recovered fine, and it just looked like young girls were electrocuting people with their hands. We all know that's impossible, right? That's crazy. The news anchors laughed so hard they cracked their makeup. Just for fun, they brought in a couple of marine biologists to talk about electric eels and their body pattern. A guy with a beard, a gal with glasses, aquarium fish in a tank makes for a solid morning segment. Did you know the guy who invented the battery was inspired by looking at the bodies of electric eels? I did not know that, Tom. That is fascinating. I've heard they can fell a horse. You're kidding. I'd never have imagined it. Apparently a lab in Japan powered their Christmas tree lights from a tank of electric eels. We can't do that with these girls now, can we? I would think not, Kristen. I would think not. Although, doesn't Christmas seem to come earlier every year? And now, the weather on the ones. Margot and the office of the mayor take it seriously days before the news desks understand that it's real. They're the ones who get the early reports of fighting in the playgrounds. A strange new kind of fighting, which leaves boys, mostly boys, sometimes girls, breathless and twitching, with scars like unfurling leaves winding up their arms or legs or across the soft flesh of their middles. Their first thought after disease is a new weapon, something these kids are bringing into school. But as the first week trickles into the second, they know that's not it. They latch onto any crazy theory going, not knowing how to tell the plausible from the ridiculous. Late at night, Margot reads a report from a team in Delhi, who are the first to discover the strip of striated muscle across the girl's collarbones, which they name the organ of electricity, or the skein for its twisted strands. At the points of the collar are electroreceptors, enabling, they theorize, a form of electric echolocation. The buds of the skein have been observed using MRI scans in the collarbones of newborn infant girls. Margot photocopies this report and has it emailed to every school in the state. For days, it's the only good science in a host of garbled interpretation. Even Daniel's momentarily grateful, before he remembers that he hates her. An Israeli anthropologist suggests that the development of this organ in humans is proof positive of the aquatic ape hypothesis, that we are naked of hair because we came from the oceans, not the jungle, where once we terrified the deeps like the electric eel, the electric ray. Preachers and televangelists grab the news and squeeze it, finding in the sticky entrails the unmistakable signs of the impending end of days. A fistfight breaks out on a popular news discussion programme between a scientist who demands that the electric girls be investigated surgically and a man of God who believes they are a harbinger of the apocalypse and must not be touched by human hand. There is an argument already about whether this thing was always latent in the human genome and has been reawoken, or whether it is a mutation, a terrible deformity. Just before sleep, Margot thinks of winged ants, and how there would be just one day every summer that the house at the lake would swarm with them, thickly upon the ground, clinging to the timber-clad frame, vibrating on the tree trunks, the air so full of ants you thought you might breathe them in. They live underground, those ants, all year long, entirely alone. They grow from their eggs. They eat what? Dust and seeds or something. And they wait and wait. And one day, when the temperature has been just right for the right number of days, and when the moisture is just so, they all take to the air at once to find each other. Margot couldn't tell this kind of thought to anyone else. They'd think she'd gone crazy from the stress, and God knows, there are enough people looking to replace her anyway. Still, she lies in bed after a day of dealing with reports of burned kids and kids with seizures and girl gangs fighting and being taken into custody for their own protection, and thinks, why now? Why right now? And she comes up again and again with those ants, biding their time, waiting for the spring. 3 weeks in, she gets a call from Bobby to say that Jocelyn's been caught fighting. They'd separated the boys from the girls on the fifth day. It seemed obvious. When they worked out, the girls were doing it. Already there are parents telling their boys not to go out alone, not to stray too far.
Once you've seen it happen, says a grey-faced woman on TV. I saw a girl in the park doing that to a boy for no reason. He was bleeding from the eyes. The eyes. Once you've seen that happen, no mom would let her boys out of her sight.
Things couldn't stay closed forever. They reorganized. Boys-only buses took them safely to boys-only schools. They fell into it easily. You only had to see a few videos online for the fear to hit you in the throat. But for the girls, it has not been so simple. You cannot keep them from each other. Some of them are angry, and some of them are mean, and now the thing is out in the open, some are vying to prove their strength and skill. There have been injuries and accidents. One girl has been struck blind by another. The teachers are afraid. Television pundits are saying,
lock them all up, maximum security.
It is, as far as anyone can tell, all of the girls of about 15 years old, as near to all as makes no difference. They can't lock them all up. It makes no sense. Still, people are asking for it. Now Jocelyn's been caught fighting. The press have it before Margot can make her way home to see her daughter. News trucks are setting up on her front lawn when she arrives. Madam Mayor, would you care to comment on the rumours that your daughter has put a boy in the hospital? No. She would not care to comment. Bobby is in the living room with Maddie. She's sitting on the couch between his legs, drinking her milk and watching Powerpuff Girls. She looks up as her mother comes in, but doesn't move, flicks her eyes back to the TV set. 10 going on 15. Okay. Margot kisses the top of Maddie's head, even as Maddie tries to look around her back to the screen. Bobby squeezes Margot's hand.
Where's Joss?
Upstairs.
And?
She's as scared as anyone.
Yeah.
Margot closes the door of the bedroom softly. Jocelyn is on her bed, legs stretched out. She's holding Mr. Bear. She's a child, just a child.
I should have called, says Margot, as soon as it started. I'm sorry.
Jocelyn's near to tears. Margot sits on the bed gently, as if not to tip her full pail over.
Dad says you haven't hurt anyone. Not badly.
There's a pause, but Joss doesn't say anything. So Margot just keeps talking.
There were 3 other girls? I know they started it. That boy should never have been near you. They've been checked out at John Muir. You just gave the kid a scare.
I know.
All right. Verbal communication. A start. Was that the first time you've done it?
Jocelyn rolls her eyes. She plucks at the comforter with one hand.
This is brand new to both of us, okay? How long have you been doing it?
She mutters so low that Margot can barely hear.
6 months.
6 months?
Mistake. Never express incredulity. Never alarm. Jocelyn draws her knees up.
I'm sorry, says Margot. It's just... it's a surprise, that's all.
Joss frowns.
Plenty of girls started it before I did. It was kind of funny when it started, like static electricity.
Static electricity? What was it? You combed your hair and stuck a balloon to it? An activity for bored 6-year-olds at birthday parties?
It was this funny, crazy thing girls were doing. There were secret videos online how to do tricks with it.
It's this exact moment, yes. When any secret you have from your parents becomes precious. Anything you know that they've never heard of.
How did you learn to do it?
Joss says.
I don't know. I just felt I could do it, okay? It's like a sort of twist.
Why didn't you say anything? Why didn't you tell me?
She looks through the window to the lawn. Beyond the high back fence, men and women with cameras are already gathering.
I don't know.
Margot remembers trying to talk to her own mother about boys or the stuff that happened at parties, about how far was too far, where a boy's hand should stop. She remembers the absolute impossibility of those conversations. Show me. Joss narrows her eyes.
I can't. I'd hurt you.
Have you been practicing? Can you control it well enough so you know you wouldn't kill me or give me a fit?
Joss takes a deep breath, puffs her cheeks out, lets the breath out slowly.
Yes.
Her mother nods. This is the girl she knows. Conscientious and serious. Still Joss.
Then show me.
I can't control it well enough for it not to hurt. Okay?
How much will it hurt?
Joss splays her fingers wide, looks at her palms.
Mine comes and goes. Sometimes it's strong, sometimes it's nothing.
Margot presses her lips together.
Okay.
Joss extends her hand, then pulls it back.
I don't want to.
There was a time when every crevice of this child's body was Margot's to clean and care for. It is not okay with her not to know her own child's strength. No more secrets. Show me. Joss is near to tears. She places her forefinger and her middle finger on her mother's arm. Margot waits to see Joss do something, hold her breath or wrinkle her brow or show exertion in the muscles of her arm. But there's nothing. Only the pain. She has read the preliminary reports out of the CDC noting that the power particularly affects the pain centres of the human brain, meaning that, while it looks like electrocution, it hurts more than it needs to. It is a targeted pulse, which sets up a response in the body's pain receptors. Nonetheless, she'd expected it to look like something. To see her flesh crisping and wrinkling, or to watch the arcing current, quick as a snake's bite. Instead, she smells the scent of wet leaves after a rainstorm, an apple orchard with the windfalls turning to rot, just as it was on her parents' farm. And then, it hurts. From the place on her forearm where Joss is touching her, it starts as a dull bone ache. The flu, travelling through the muscles and joints. It deepens. Something is cracking her bone, twisting it, bending it, and she wants to tell Joss to stop, but she can't open her mouth. It burrows through the bone like it's splintering apart from the inside. She can't stop herself seeing a tumour, a solid, sticky lump bursting out through the marrow of her arm, splitting the ulna and the radius to sharp fragments. She feels sick. She wants to cry out. The pain radiates across her arm and nauseatingly through her body. There's not a part of her it hasn't touched now. She feels its echo in her head and down her spine, across her back, around her throat and out, spreading across her collarbone. The collarbone. It has only been a few seconds, but the moments have elongated. Only pain can bring such a tension to the body. This is how Margot notices the answering echo in her chest. Among the forests and mountains of pain, a chiming note along her collarbone. Like, answering, to like. It reminds her of something. A game she played when she was a girl. How funny. She hasn't thought of that game in years. She never told anyone about it. She knew she mustn't, although she couldn't say how she knew. In the game, she was a witch, and she could make a ball of light in the palm of her hand. Her brothers played that they were spacemen with plastic ray guns they'd bought with cereal packet tokens. But the little game she'd played, entirely by herself among the beech trees along the rim of their property, was different. In her game, she didn't need a gun, or space helmet, or lightsaber. In the game Margot played when she was a child, she was enough all by herself. There is a tingling feeling in her chest and arms and hands, like a dead arm waking up. The pain is not gone now, but it is irrelevant. Something else is happening. Instinctively, she digs her hands into Jocelyn's patchwork comforter. She smells the scent of the beech trees, as if she were back beneath their woody protection, their musk of old timber and wet loam. She sendeth her lightning even unto the ends of the earth. When she opens her eyes, there is a pattern around each of her hands. Concentric circles, light and dark, burned into the comforter where her hands clutched it. And she knows. She felt that twist. And she remembers that maybe she has always known it, and it has always belonged to her. Hers to cup in her hand, hers to command to strike. "Oh God," she says. "Oh God."